Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is January 9th. We are in Shmuel, Perek Dal, Chapter 4, Pasuk Gimel, Verse 13. The last thing we discussed was that the Bnei Yisrael lost the war with the Plishtim, and many were killed, and the Aron was taken. And now, a man from Binyamin was running from the war, and he came to Shiloh, and his clothing was torn. That's an important fact. His clothing was torn, and there was dirt on his head as a show of mourning. And we said last time that this person is Shaul, who will eventually become the king of the Jewish people. Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. Vayavon, he came. Vihine Eli Yosheva Lakisei. And behold, Eli was sitting on the chair. Yad Derech Mitzapeh. Towards the way of that he could. Mitzapeh means it could mean to seek, could mean to hope. As he was
hoping to see his son.
Yeah, it's a tzofeh is a seer, someone who sees far away. But we'll see presently that Eli really couldn't see well, but he was facing the road, trying to see whatever news he could see. Ki hayalibo chared, for his heart was trembling, al aron ho'elokim, because of the ark of Hashem. So he was concerned about this battle that was raging, knowing that they had taken the Aron to war. We had mentioned last time that had never happened before or since. And Eli was afraid what was happening to the Aron. Now remember, Eli had two sons at war also, Hophni and Pinchas, and they were killed. He doesn't know that yet. But the Pasuk is telling us that his concern was over the Aron. The man meaning Shaul came to tell in the city. He came to the city of Shiloh to tell them what was going on. And the whole city cried out, or they were upset.
Cried out.
What then?
Once it's cried out.
Cried out. Okay, so the whole city cried out when they heard all the terrible news that Shaul was telling them. Vayishma Eli es kol hatzalka, and Eli heard the sound of the cries. Vayomer, and he said, Mekol hehamon hazeh, what is this sound of confusion? Vayish mihar, the man went quickly, vayavo, and he came, vayageid le'eli, and he told Eli. So we'll see exactly what he told him in a moment. But he came to tell Eli because he had mentioned in the city what was going on, and now he came to tell Eli. Ve'eli ben tishim u'shmon eshon, Eli was 98 years old. Ve'enav kama, his eyes had literally means come up, which means that they weren't seeing well. V'loyacholiros, he couldn't see well. Couldn't see. Vayomer ha'ish al Eli, and the man said to Eli, Anochi haba mina ma'aracha, I am the one who has come from the war, from the arrangement of war. V'ani mina ma'aracha nasi hayom, and I, from the ma'aracha, from the war, I've escaped today. So, in other words, it's pretty bad news. Vayomer, Eli said, Mehaya hadavar bini, what happened, my son? So give me the details. Vayan hamevaser vayomer, and the mevaser, the one bearing the news, answered and said, Nos Yisrael lifnei plishtim, the Jews have run from before the plishtim. Vagam magefa gedolah ha'isavam, and also a great calamity has befallen the nation, meaning many, many people were killed. Vagam shnei vanecha mesu, and also your two sons have died. Chafni u'Pinchas, Chafni and Pinchas, va'aron hu elokim no kacha, and the aron of Hashem was taken. Vayihi ki azkiro es aron hu elokim, it was when he mentioned the aron hu elokim. Vayipome al akisei achoranis, Eli fell off the chair backwards. Ba'ad yad hashar, near the entrance of the gate. Vatishaver mafrakto, and his neck broke, vayamos, and he died. Kizakin ha'ish v'chaved, for the man was old and heavy, meaning that he wasn't he was frail. V'hu shafates Yisrael arba'im shana, and he had judged the Jews. He'd been the leader of the Jewish people for 40 years. Shechalaso and his daughter-in-law, Ashes Pinchas, the wife of Pinchas, Harat Lalas. She was, she had been pregnant, and she went into labor. So this word Lalas does not, is not a common word. But they were, she went into a difficult labor. Vatishma es hashmua, and she heard the news el hilakacha aronu elokim about the ark of God being taken. Umeis chamiha v'isha, and the death of her father-in-law and her husband. Vatichra v'atelid, and she bent over and gave birth. Kinevchu aleha tzireha, for her labor pangs had turned on her, which means she went into a sudden labor. This was not a natural thing. She was not really ready to give birth at this point, but the news troubled her so much, it caused her to go into an early labor, and it caused her to have a difficult labor and to give birth, but it cost her life. Ocha'es Musa, and as she was dying, those who were standing over her said to her, Al tiri, do not be afraid, ki venya ladat, for you gave birth to a son. Now that the baby's okay. For lo ansa, she didn't answer. For lo shasa liba, she did not put her heart to it. Fatikra la na'ar, I chavod. And she named the baby, I chavod, which means there is no honor. Lamor saying, Gala chavod mi Israel. The honor, the glory has been removed, has been exiled from the Jewish people. El hilakach aron hu elokim, because of the taking of the aron of Hashem, vel chamiha v'ishanam, because of her father-in-law and her husband. Vatomer, and she said, Gala chavod mi Yisrael, the kavod, the honor has been removed, has been taken away from the Jewish people. Ki nilkach Aron Ho'elokim, for the Aron of Hashem has been taken away. So here is the story. We need to go back now and go through this a little more carefully and see exactly what was happening. What was, when Shaul came to give the news, how did he do it? What was his plan? And then how the news was handled by Eli first, and then by his daughter-in-law, the wife of Pinchas. Okay, so the Shaul came to tell the news. Now, he's got bad news to tell. So, if he's got bad news to tell, he knows that it's not easy to accept this news. To hear it, it's going to be terrible news. The amount of people that were killed in the war, it was huge. A lot of people were killed. And 30,000 people were killed. And then the fact that the Aron was taken, and also that Hophni and Pinchas were killed, the two great leaders of the Jewish people, one of whom would have succeeded their father as the Kohen Gadol. So he's got to give this news. Now, if he's got to give the news, we all know that when giving bad news or terrible news, a person has to be careful with how they say it, because it can be shocking to the system. And one has to give news in a way that won't shock the system. That's the typical phrase, you know, are you sitting down? That kind of thing. So you don't want to shock the system. The Gemara says that a person who has to bear bad news should try not to have to say it overtly. The Gemara in Pesachim relates a story where one of the Amoraim asked the other one about his father. He hadn't seen him in a long time, and he asked him how his father was doing. His father had passed away. So he said, my mother's okay. Mm-hmm. And rather than to say overtly, my father died, it's too direct. So he said it in that manner. One should be very careful in relating bad news. So Shaul had to relate bad news. There's really no way to whitewash this. It's pretty bad. But what he did is that he made it clear to the people that he had bad news even before he got there. Because he's running from the war, you don't know if he's coming with good news or bad news. And when you see him coming, maybe he's got good news. And even if he looks a little disheveled and you're afraid, but it is the natural tendency of people to try to rationalize that, no, really it's okay, really it's okay, really it's okay. So he deliberately came with torn clothing and dirt on his head, so that when people saw him coming from the road, even before he got there, everybody knew there was bad news. No one would delude themselves into thinking that he was bringing good news. Yes?
Is he still carrying the luchos at this point?
I don't know what happened to the luchos. That's a good question.
If he's still carrying the luchos, people know that it's not.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I don't know what happened to the luchos at this point. It never tells us what happens to the luchos when he gets back. Rashi just tells us he grabbed them and ran. It doesn't tell us what happened after that.
Like an important detail.
It does, but the Navi never mentions it. This is okay. So he's coming with torn clothing and dirt on his head. So he comes into the. So now, Eli is waiting for news. Shaul could go to Eli first. In fact, that would normally be the protocol. Eli is the shofet; he's the leader. So what do you do? What do you do first? The person has good or bad news, makes no difference. You come. What's the first thing you do? You tell Rabbi Feldman first, right? You don't go right. The first thing you do is tell the person in charge. That's what you do first. Then the news gets around. You don't go. So, but Shaul deliberately bypasses Eli and goes to the city first. Now, why does Shaul do that? Why does he go to the city first and then only then go to Shaul?
To Eli.
Yes. So it seems to me that what is going on here is. Shaul has a problem because there's no gentle way of breaking new news to Eli because Eli can't see. So the visual aid of his torn clothing and dirt on his head is not going to help with Eli. And Eli is old and frail. And Shaul knows that he's got to be very careful on how to break the news to Eli, but there's no gentle way to do it. So Shaul first goes to the city and tells them, and there's an outcry. That outcry should tip off Eli that the news isn't good. So Shaul comes, and there is an outcry, and then Eli says, "What's going on?" So Eli knows this isn't going to be good. And the Navi tells us in Pasuk Tezva, verse 15, that he's 98 years old and he can't see. That's crucial. Then, Pasuk Tezva, verse 16, he says, "I come from the Ma'aracha, I come from the arrangement of war, and I ran today, so I escaped." So he's making it clear, this is not good, this is a huge outcry in the city, and I have escaped from the Ma'aracha, from the war. So now Eli knows it's bad news. So then Eli says to him, "Mehaya hadavar bini, what happened, my son?" Eli knows it's bad, and now Eli's asking for details. So Shaul assumes, I think correctly, that Eli is sufficiently prepared to hear the news. Because Eli is resigned. He says, "What happened, my son? Tell me. Don't hide it from me." Remember, this is Eli who was the one that when Shmuel had bad news for him, and Eli knew that Shmuel had bad news for him, Eli insisted, "Shmuel, tell me." And remember that after Shmuel told him, what was Eli's reaction?
Hashem is good.
Right? So this is up to Hashem. Fine. Whatever Hatov Ein Ov Yaseh, right? Whatever he wants. Vayom Hashem Hu, it's Hashem Hatov Ein Ov Yaseh. Whatever is good in his eyes, he'll do. So Eli is prepared for the bad news. Shaul now knows that Eli is prepared for the bad news. Yes?
This could be passed over as just being an affectionate sort of thing to say, but I think it's probably no accident that it occurs twice. And in this setting, in this instance, it's a little bit of a foreshadowing that his own
Manim
are gone.
Okay. I mean, he doesn't have his children anymore. But it certainly is a way of he's settling the speaker,
yeah.
Right? He's telling the speaker, "It's okay, my son. Just tell me. I'm ready. I get it. This is not going to be good. So let me know." Right. So, and Eli has done this before. We have experience with Eli already. We collectively, having learned Shmuel, we know that Eli is able to accept bad news. Shaul knows this as well. Eli's no slouch. Eli is a leader. He's been a leader for 40 years. He's a man of character. He's a man who has heard good and bad in his lifetime. He's ready. So now Shaul's title becomes the Mevasser, the one who gives the news. The Mevasser is the news bearer. So he says, now in Yod Zayin 17, the Mevasser answers. Now he gives the whole story. The Jews have run from before the Plishtim. And also a great magefa, slaughter has happened. So he's telling the news, and he's not mincing words. The Jews had to run away. There was a huge slaughter amongst the people. And also your two sons have died, Hophni and Pinchas. So he is doing this in ascending order of calamity, of bad news, because he don't want to give it all at once. So he's starting slow and building up. First of all, the Jews had to run away. It was a rout. That's number one. Number two, it was a slaughter. 30,000 people were killed. Number three, your two sons were amongst the fatalities. They were killed as well. And number four, and the Aron HaElokim was taken. Shaul knows full well that as far as Eli is concerned, his children being killed is only the second to the worst news. But the worst news is that the Aron was taken. Remember again that when Eli was sitting waiting for news, he was worried about the Aron of Hashem. That was what he was worried about, more than his own children. That is Eli's primary concern. And therefore, when the bad news is given, he builds it up slowly, starting with the rout, then how many Jews were killed, terrible slaughter, then even Hophni and Pinchas were killed, your own sons, and finally the Aron of Hashem was taken. And then in Yudches 18, Vayihi kaz kiro es arono elokim, when he mentioned the Aron elokim, Eli was taking it okay. Eli was able to handle the news. Eli remembers a descendant of Aharon, and remember what was Aharon's reaction when his own two sons were killed? Vayidom Aharon. Aharon was silent. Silent doesn't just mean he was holding back. It means internally he was silent. Aharon internalized the fact that this is Hashem's will, and I accept it. Not happy about it, but I accept it. And Eli, in the footsteps of his ancestor Aharon, was accepting all the bad news, including the deaths of his sons. But when the taking of the Aron HaElokim is mentioned, that shocks him too much. And he falls from off the chair backwards at the gate, and his neck is broken, and he dies. And the Navi also tells us, Ki zakin ha'ish v'chaved, for the man was very old. The Gemara says in Maseches Chulin, I think, the Gemara says that normally this injury he sustained would not have killed a person. It may have been a pretty bad injury, but it would not have killed them. But because he was very old and frail, that's why it killed him. And he had judged the Jews for 40 years. So as much as Shaul tried to minimize the effect of the bad news on Eli, in the end, the loss of the Aron was something which was so dramatic and so terrible, the likes of which had never happened to the Jewish people ever since they had come to Eretz Yisrael. It was something which really he couldn't handle, and he fell over and died. And this is what was meant when Hashem said to Shmuel, back in Paragimel in chapter 3, what's that? In Pasuk Yod Aleph, verse 11, Hashem says to Shmuel, I'm going to do something in the Jewish people. Whoever hears it, his two ears will ring. It's going to be something that will be so shocking to everybody's system. Their ears will ring from the news, and that will be the taking of the Aron. Everything else is bad, but those things had happened before. The taking of the Aron is something which had never happened before, and the intensity of that loss was so great that Eli could not handle the news. The combination of the Aron representing Hashem's presence amongst the Jewish people, going to the Plishtim, that would have seemed incomprehensible and impossible, because how could Hashem now as it were, confer his Shechina, his divine presence, on the Plishtim, more than the Jewish people. That's essentially what it's a sign of. And more than that, the Chil Hashem, the defaming of God's name, for the Aron to be taken to the Plishtim. We're going to see later what the Plishtim do with the Aron at first, where they put the Aron. Where do you think they would put the Aron?
They put cattle.
No.
Next to their God.
They'll put it next to their deity. That's what they're going to do. So the incredible Chil Hashem that is taking place with the loss of the Aron, this is something which was just too much for anybody to bear. And as a result, Eli dies from the news. Similarly, his daughter-in-law has a very bad reaction, which we'll talk about in a moment. Yes, questions?
Why would it be, I guess because they knew the Jewish people was valuable, but why would it be to them valuable?
Well, we mentioned last week that this was they understood that this was the way that Hashem put his, this was the vehicle through which Hashem put his Shechina, his divine presence, in the Jewish people. Okay, now, Pasuk Yod Tes, verse 19, and his daughter-in-law, the wife of Pinchas, went into an early labor. And she was ready to give birth, and she heard this bad news. Now, what news did she hear? She heard, Elhi lakach Aron Elokim, the taking of the Aron of Hashem, umeis kami of Isha, and the death of her father-in-law and her husband. So that's the news that she heard, and she therefore went into a very bad labor. So the question is, with her, what was the most significant of those things?
Aaron.
So
her
husband
is the younger daughter.
Her husband was the most, because it's going in ascending order again.
I think it's going in descending.
So there's no question when Shaul presented the news to Eli, it went in ascending order. Here, it could be one or the other. It could be that the Navi is telling us in ascending order how bad things were for her, or the Navi could be telling us in descending order. I don't think it's clear from here. Let's keep reading. Pasukah, verse 20. When she was dying, so those who were around her said, "Don't worry, you have a healthy baby son." And she didn't answer, she didn't care. And she said, in Chafal of 21, she said, the name of the child is Ichavod. No loss of kavod, loss of glory, saying that the kavod is gone from the Jewish people because of the loss of the Aron and her father-in-law and her husband. Again, is that ascending or descending? It's not easy to tell. Chafes 22, and she said, the honor is gone from the Jewish people, for the Aron was taken. Now, aside from the fact that Chafes 22 is redundant, it just said that in the Chafalef. It sounds like she said it twice.
She didn't mention the other two. But
she doesn't mention the other two. She doesn't mention the death of her father-in-law and her husband when it's repeated here in Chaf Beis. It seems like these are her final words. It sounds like these are her last words. Gala chavod mi Yisrael, the kavod is gone from the Jewish people, ki nilkach Aron HaElokim, for the Aron HaElokim is gone. And with that, she died. So we see from Chaf Beis, we'll have to discuss why she repeats the words, but it does seem that for her as well, even though she's not Eli, you know, you would have said, okay, Eli on his level, or he's 98 years old, he's been the shofet for 40 years, he's close to God. For him, I can understand that he could put the Aron even over and above the loss of his two sons. But for his daughter-in-law, okay, I understand she's a big tzaddikas, she's an important woman and all that, but she's younger, I mean, she's still in childbearing years. We're not talking about an old wise woman who's been around for 90-100 years. We're talking about a middle-aged adult. We're talking about a younger woman, and she's definitely a righteous woman. So I think it would be understandable if we would accept it if she would place the loss of her husband as paramount, more so than the loss of the Aron. But at the end of her life, she recognizes that the loss of the Aron supersedes the loss of her husband and her father-in-law. Remember, we said that what's going to happen is that the line of Isamar, which is who Eli comes from, will eventually shift back to the line of Elazar, the other son of Aron. But it doesn't happen yet. The Kahuna Gedola the high priesthood still remains in the family of Isamar for the time being. So I imagine that Eli does have other descendants who will take over for him as Kohen Gadol, besides Hophni and Pinchas, and this one lost. Oh, and besides Ikavod, because he's too young, he's an infant. Somebody had to become Kohen Gadol. So, but I don't know. I don't know the names. So this is the sad story of the loss and how it happened, and then we have, as was mentioned, the prophecy coming true, Eli's sons dying, Eli dying, even his daughter-in-law dying, the loss of the Aron. When the wife of Pinchas, it goes into this early labor, and she begins to die, so she names her son Ichavod, which is lack of or loss of kavod. So that's how she names the baby. We know that in earlier generations, they would name children based on the ma'ura. They would name children based on what happened, the circumstances of their birth. That's the way they would name children. That was the normal way to name children. All of the Shevatim are named that way. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehud, all named for the circumstances surrounding their birth. Yaakov, Esav, Yitzchak,
Peleg.
Yishmael, Peleg, okay, it's even going further, right? But how about Zerach? How about Zerach and Peretz?
He was Benomi.
Okay, we're going to get to Binyamin. We're going to get to Binyamin in a moment. But they're all named for circumstances. That's what they're named for. Noach is named Zayanach Hamenu. Noach is named based on circumstances. They're all named based on circumstances. The Gemara tells us that in earlier generations, when they understood the significance of circumstances, they were able to name for circumstances. Today, we don't understand the significance of circumstances, so typically we don't name for circumstances, even when we do, but we take an existing name. We don't make up a name. So that even if we choose to name using a circumstance just because, you know, it happened Purim time, so we'll name the baby Esther. Right? But we may choose a name based on the time of the year, but we're not going to make up a new name. We're not going to make up our own name because we don't feel that we have the wherewithal to choose names. That's why we name for previous generations. We have names in translation. Yiddish names are translated names, and our English translated names, there are Hebrew translated names. So okay, but we're still dating back to something else. We're not making up names, as what goes on in the world today, where people make up all kinds of crazy names for their children. So that's something we don't typically do. We use existing names, even if we're not naming for a relative or for a some person who we were close to who has passed away that we want to perpetuate their name, but we still use an existing name. They named based on circumstances. Usually the names are, we'll call it, positive. Sometimes the names seem almost trivial. For example, Yaakov. Yaakov was called Yaakov because he was holding on to the heel of Esav, so he's called Heel. It's a funny name to use. Yitzchak is called Laffy because Avram laughed also, so they called him Yitzchak. Right, so those names don't seem, at least from a certain perspective, they don't really seem to have any import. It's just like, well, that's what happened, so we'll call him Yitzchak. As opposed to, for example, Yishmael, that seems to have a serious connotation. God will hear. God heard her prayer. That sounds like the kind of name we'd like. So sometimes the names don't seem to have importance, even though they are named for a circumstance. The circumstance almost seems like, why would you name based on that circumstance? So this is what I mean to say, that because they were Nevi'im, they were prophets, and if they weren't prophets, they were certainly better connected to what's going on upstairs than we are. Therefore, they understood which circumstances are significant and which are not. And therefore, Yitzchak understood to name his son Yaakov, even though one could have said, okay, holding on to the heel is not that important. Or maybe you could have named him Wannabe, because he wanted to be the Bechor. Right? Yeah. But he called him, he named him Heel. That's what he named him. So Yitzchak knew that that was the important name for Yaakov. When Leah names her children, so she names her children based on something which I don't know that we would saddle our children with. Based on what her relationship is with her husband or her husband's relationship with her. Ruvain, Ki Ra Hashem Ba'ani, Hashem saw my affliction, Ki Ataya Havani Ishi, now my husband will love me. Shimon, Ki Shama Hashem, Ki Snu Anochi, Hashem heard that I am hated. So she named him Shimon. These names, you're saddling a child with a name. First of all, why would we want our children to become aware of some sort of a negative interaction between myself and my spouse, and I'm going to name them that forever? So my son Shimon is going to grow up knowing that he was born under circumstances where my husband didn't love me, right? So with those,
why would you want to be reminded?
Why would you be reminded?
By using that name
right.
all the time. Let's say the relationship gets great,
right?
You're
right.
constantly reminded of a time that you'd rather not remember,
right?
You?
Right. So evidently, I mean, again, the Imahos, our matriarchs, were all prophets, and they knew which circumstances are important. And evidently, Leah knew that it was the right thing to name their children in that manner, and that the by naming them those names, they would be reminders that Yaakov needs to love her more, that she needs to accept the fact that Yaakov loves Rachel more. I don't know, however we're going to explain those things. We're at the time when we learned Parashas Vayetze on Sunday night, we did go through that in great detail. But it was important to remember those circumstances. But none of that holds a candle to a name like this.
Right.
Ikavod, loss of honor. What a great name for a child. He's going to walk. What's your name? Yes, I'll call. Yeah, I see Ikavod in the back. Right? So that's a real serious name. So the precedent for that is Binyamin. Because Rachel died when giving birth to Binyamin. She also died in childbirth. And she named him Ben-Oni. Ben-Oni. That's what she named him. The son of my, not affliction, of my, that's with an ayin, of my mourning. Onain is to mourn. Son of my loss. So, because she died in childbirth. So she named him Ben-Oni, and his father named him Binyamin. Now, why would she want him to grow up with that? And here, why would the wife of Pinchas want her son to grow up with Ikavod? So we did discuss this as well on Sunday night, when we talked about the name Miriam. Because Miriam means
bitter.
Miriam means bitter. Now, there's a very common name amongst us. Many people have the name Miriam. It's a very well-liked name, but it means bitter. It comes from the word maror, as in the bitter herbs. And the reason why she is named Miriam is she was born 86 years before the Exodus, before the Jews came out of Egypt. And that was when the slavery reached its apex, where the slavery had been building for 30 years from the death of Levi, which took place 116 years prior to the Jews leaving Egypt. As you know, the slavery didn't just start overnight. It wasn't like one day they were free, the next day they were slaves. It was one of these things where slowly but surely the Egyptians indoctrinated the Jewish people to become slaves. And it was a gradual process, taking away one right, taking away another right, making another expectation. It was a very slow process, various laws being passed, and the Jews eventually became slaves. That was a 30-year process. Finally, after 30 years, they really were slaves. And that lasted for 86 years until Moshe comes with the plagues and the Jews get out of Egypt. So she was born right when the slavery became intense. And therefore, she was named Miriam Bitter. So again, you're going to saddle your child with the name Bitter? It's a very difficult thing to understand, to name your child Bitter. So we name our children Miriam. I have a daughter Miriam. But that's because we know that there was this great woman Miriam who lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But her name was Bitter. So how do we understand that? It's very similar to over here. So we explained when we discussed the name Miriam that what Yocheved was doing by naming her Miriam is to that Miriam should look at it as her life's mission to deal with that bitterness. She was born into a circumstance of bitterness, and she, her name reflected those circumstances, and therefore her life's mission was clear. Her life's mission was to facilitate the Jews getting out of that bitterness. That was her life's mission. And that is what she does. Besides being the one to announce the birth of Moshe, and the one to get her parents to go back together because Amram, when he separated from Yocheved, as she told him, you're causing the death of both the boys and the girls, where Paro only meant to kill the boys, not the girls, and then telling him you're going to have a son, Moshe, and then when Moshe was put in the Nile, that she stayed to watch, and then when Moshe was taken by the daughter of Paro, she then went and told him, when she stood by and she saw that the daughter of Paro tried to get Moshe to nurse from Egyptian women, and Moshe wouldn't do it. As a little baby, he wouldn't nurse from Egyptian women. And so Miriam steps forward and said, would you like me to get you a wet nurse from the Jewish people? And Basha says, please go. And she goes, and who does she get? His mother. She gets Yocheved. So Yocheved is able to nurse her own baby. So for 2 years, he's taken care of by his own mother, even though he's in the house of Paro. So Miriam is facilitating Moshe Rabbeinu becoming Moshe Rabbeinu, the birth of everything about Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who gets us out of Egypt. But Moshe Rabbeinu came about through Miriam. Miriam is the one who facilitates that. In addition to all of that, she also is one of the two primary midwives, she and her mother Yocheved, who are named Shifra and Puah. They are the primary midwives. The Ibn Ezra explains, of course, they weren't the only two midwives. In a nation of several million people, you can't only have two midwives. But they were the chief midwives. And it is through them, as the Gemara says, that because of the Nashim Tzidkanios, because of the righteous women, that's how the Jews got out of Egypt. What regard were the women righteous? Were they doing more mitzvot than the men? How were they the righteous women that got us out of Egypt? And the Gemara makes it very clear, because the women made sure that there would be a future for the Jewish people, even under the worst circumstances. That they did not say, the men were willing to say, look, we can't have children now, it's terrible, we're slaves, we're just not interested in that. And the women would make sure that there will be a future of Jewish people, despite the fact that they themselves are slaves. How difficult it is to have a pregnancy and a childbirth and an infant in the house when a person is not a slave. You're
times
a slave. Over and over again. Then the women were willing to go through it and do it anyway, because they recognize that that is their job, is to make sure there is a future, there is a Jewish people for Hashem to take out of Egypt. Because if they wouldn't, they wouldn't be a Jewish people. So Miriam and her mother Yocheved are the two that are the primary women in that equation. They're the ones who, they're the midwives. But they're not just the midwives. They're pushing the women. They're the ones telling the women. They're encouraging the women. We need to have children. We need to continue to have children. I know it's difficult, but we've got to do this. This is important. They're the ones lecturing. They're the ones encouraging. They're the ones who are going around championing the whole idea of having children so that there'll be a future of a Jewish people. So Miriam, her life was dedicated to getting the Jews out of Egypt. That's why her mother named her Miriam, bitter, so that she would carry that with her whole life. That my job is to transform that bitterness. When the wife of Pinchas names her son Ikavod, I imagine it's a similar thing. Since they understood that names were due to circumstances, it didn't become something which his friends would then make fun of him for. Oh, your name is Ikavod, right? It wasn't like that, because they were all named for circumstances. And they all understood that if that's the kind of name that he got, then that was a message to him that his job is to bring that kavod back to the Jewish people. Now, with Miriam, we know that she was successful in her life's mission. Here, we don't have a record of Ikavod then being the facilitator to bring the kavod back. But why she would name her son this, that would explain it. Yes.
Do we ever hear, come across his name again? Or is this the only time it's mentioned?
I don't believe it's mentioned. I don't believe so. I don't want to say for certain. I don't know I don't know all the different psukim, but I don't believe that it's mentioned again.
So when the Goyim call the sun Ichabod,
that's where it comes from. Yes, they don't know what they're doing. Yes.
I missed last week. Why did we lose 30,000?
We didn't discuss that number. We lost a lot of people because the Jews were beaten by the Plishtim. You want to know what the Jews did to deserve that kind of loss?
Why didn't they suffer?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I these sort of things, very often you have two things coming together. You have other reasons why people would be killed, and then you have the war itself. With the loss of Eli, so several things have now happened. First of all, we lost the Shofet. We lost the one who was the leader of the Jewish people. We also lost the Kohen Gadol. We also lost the Kohen Gadol's successors. We also lost the greatest Talmud Chacham, Torah sage, of his day. Eli wasn't just a Kohen Gadol and a leader. He was also a very, very significant Talmud Chacham. He was the teacher of Shmuel. So now Shmuel loses his Rebbe. That's also very important. It's one thing for Shmuel to then assume the position of leader of the Jewish people, but to lose his Rebbe suddenly in this manner, that also leaves Shmuel somewhat of an orphan. Not that it doesn't tell us about his father at this point, but the point is he doesn't have his own mentor, is now gone. So we Jews losing the Aron, but from a human standpoint, from a hierarchy standpoint, we've lost a lot of our infrastructure in that way as well. Losing the Kohen Gadol, losing the leader, losing the Talmud Chacham, losing the mentor of Shmuel, losing the natural successors to the Kohen Gadol. So we've really been decimated, and the loss, of course, of the Aron tops the whole thing. That's the worst of it all. With that vacuum, Shmuel is the natural figure to step in, because there really isn't anybody else. Shmuel, who anyway for years has been the one, the primary prize student of Eli, the one through which, remember we had before that the word of Hashem was not so prevalent, but then through Shmuel all of a sudden there's an explosion of nevuah, of prophecy, coming through Shmuel and to others as well. And it's natural for him to step into the role of leadership. What is very important to note is that in Perek Hay, which we'll start next week, Mitzvah Hashem, chapter 5, there's no discussion about this vacuum and no discussion about Shmuel. The discussion is exclusively about the Aron.
Oh.
It's exclusively about the Aron. The Aron is the primary thing that was lost, and the Aron is now the focal point of the Navi. What we're going to read about is not about Shmuel. It's not about the 30,000 people that died and all the orphans and the widows who are now left. It's not about who's going to be Kohen Gadol. It's not about Shmuel losing his mentor, his personal grief, nothing. It's going to be all about the Aron. We are shifting our focus away from the Jewish people, away from Shmuel, away from Eli. Since the beginning, the whole focus, the lens of the camera has been on Elkanah, on Chana, on Penina, on Shmuel, on Eli. That's who it's on. Hophni and Pinchas. That's who it's on. And now that lens is going to shift away from all of that to the Aron. The Aron is now all that matters. And until the situation with the Aron is resolved, we're not going to discuss anything about anybody. It's all irrelevant until we finish discussing the Aron.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.